Welcome to Copyright Clearance Center's podcast series. I'm Christopher Keneally for Beyond the Book. It's Friday, November 1st, 2019. Our weekly guest on the show is Andrew Albanese, Publishers Weekly senior writer, who joins me today from New York with news and insights on books and reading. Welcome back, Andrew.
Hey there, Chris.
So here we are, the 1st of November, Andrew, and finally Macmillan will roll out its 8-week embargo on new release ebooks in public libraries today. And while Macmillan CEO John Sargent tried to calm the waters with a letter to librarians, you report this week that that letter appears to have made things worse in many respects. So why are librarians bristling at Sargent's letter?
Yes. So the day is finally here. And barring any last minute stays of execution, Macmillan has now officially begun embargoing new release ebooks in public libraries. And as you know, on Tuesday, just days before the policy went into effect and nearly 16 months after the publisher first started embargoing titles from his Tor imprint as part of an experiment, John Sargent has finally reached out directly to librarians. And I guess it was sort of a last ditch attempt to sort of explain what he's doing. And, you know, it's a typical, hey, no one loves libraries more than me letter, and we're not trying to hurt you. You know, sorry I didn't reach out sooner. And of course, that is a nod to the fact that Sargent's only official communication about the embargo was written to Macmillan's authors and agents in July. But now, interestingly, in this letter, Sargent says he's willing to engage librarians and attend a few meetings. And indeed, he even says he's going to jump on the Amtrak and be at the ALA midwinter meeting in Philadelphia this coming January.
If John Sargent indeed struck a conciliatory note in his letter, why aren't librarians responding in kind?
Well, for a number of reasons, but first and foremost, because the letter, and you can read it on the Publishers Weekly site, is, you know, how do I put this politely? I don't think I can, actually. Well, it's, librarians say it's a fig leaf. You know, for one, I'll note that it's been made clear to me personally, and I'm speaking for myself here, not for my esteemed employer, Publishers Weekly, that Macmillan executives have made it clear from the start that there's a strategic decision that's been taken in-house not to engage on this subject, the embargo, in any meaningful way. So what does that mean? Well, it means they've refused to comment or really talk to the press very much, including to me, even though I've made repeated requests for comment over the last 16 months. And I think the bet in Macmillan is eventually that people are going to move on, right? Well, there's a lot of other stuff to deal with out there, and that they're eventually going to, you know, come to accept or at least maybe even like this new deal, much like libraries did with HarperCollins and its 26 lend limit, which, you know, got quite a bit of pushback when it debuted in 2010, but which librarians now say is actually pretty good for them. But all of this still leaves me with the question, why? Why now is John Sargent writing letters and taking meetings with librarians after sort of ducking this whole thing for the last 16 months or so?
Any idea yourself? Why now?
Yeah, you know, I can't say. I don't know. And I hesitate to even hazard a guess here. I don't think Macmillan is about to open up its books and start sharing its sales data with librarians. And I, you know, as nice a guy as John Sargent is, and he really is, I don't know that a charm offensive is really the right call right now. So I just don't know.
And as you reported on Wednesday, Andrew, Sargent attempted to justify the embargo in his letter, yet librarians are reacting quite negatively. What did he say that elicited such a response?
Well, I mean, no disrespect, and I'm just passing on what I've heard from many librarians, including ALA officials, who I met with this week in New York City. And much of this is backed up by my own pretty considerable reporting, as our listeners will know. But when you tell someone you mean no disrespect, you really shouldn't go on to sort of mischaracterize the subject you're talking about. And that's what librarians are upset about. That's what they say John Sargent is doing, that in his letter, he's sharing views that are just false. First and foremost is the idea that this embargo policy was, and I'll quote Sargent's letter here, well considered and deeply discussed with librarians, and that he's sharing data with librarians. And, you know, yes, Macmillan executives did meet with librarians. Sargent says in the letter that the company has reached out to librarians from more than 35 systems. But librarians say that there were no discussions. There were lectures. The talks were not a give and take. And I have to say, this summer, after being ducked for about a year, when Tor publisher Fritz Foy told a blogger that the company had been consulting with librarians, I got really curious and I started to work back. And as it turns out, I spoke to many librarians, more than a dozen librarians, in fact, who had meetings with Macmillan officials, some of them at the 2019 midwinter meeting in Seattle and some at Book Expo this past May. And every single librarian I talked to, like many others that I've spoken to, told me the same thing. Yes, we had a meeting with Macmillan. We talked, but they didn't listen. Every single librarian I spoke to told me that they strongly disputed Macmillan's conclusions and its rationale for the embargo. Every librarian I spoke to said Macmillan shared no data that they could examine. And every librarian I spoke to stressed that their individual meetings were not a give and take, but seemed more or less designed to soften the ground for Macmillan to expand its Tor experiment to more of the publisher's new releases company-wide. And this week, ALA officials confirmed that for me again. They said that they have been very consistent from the start. We can't do this. Anything that you do that delays basic access, we will fight and we will not be on board with. And in the last 16 months, I have to say, you know, we've been following this pretty closely here. Have you seen any librarians in the press break ranks from that position? Now, to be clear, I'm not saying John Sargent and Macmillan executives are intentionally misleading us in this letter. Did some librarians say in meetings, yeah, this maybe could be okay? Probably. There's a diversity of opinion on any subject out there, I suppose. But what I'm going to suggest is that Macmillan officials may be hearing only what they wanted to hear. Because it's crystal clear from my extensive reporting and obvious from the public backlash, just look at the headlines that are going on out there, that the overwhelming majority of librarians will never accept this embargo. And it's clear that a number of these librarians told Macmillan that very thing in their meetings. And to suggest, as Sargent did in his letter, that some librarians appeared understanding, is what he wrote, is simply baffling, especially to put that in a letter to librarians who know otherwise. Trust me, I've spoken with hundreds of librarians. That's not an exaggeration over the last year about this very subject. They know how they feel. You don't need to characterize their response in your letter.
All right. But what about the good things Sargent says the policy will provide for? For example, the perpetual access copy at half price. Isn't that a benefit librarians would appreciate?
You know, you'd think it would be, but again, a particularly sore spot, what I'm hearing from librarians, again, is that perpetual access copy. Because again, librarians see the way it's portrayed in this letter is sophistry. Again, librarians know what they want. They know what they ask for. And in this letter, Sargent suggests that Macmillan's embargo policy is actually anchored by this big concession, which is this single perpetual access copy to libraries. But librarians know that that's kind of a head fake. In fact, you know, it's a bit of a ruse. As someone who's deeply covered the library ebook market since its inception, yeah, it's fair to say that librarians have asked for the right to buy perpetual access copies, but that's in addition to, not in lieu of, multiple metered copies. And to assert otherwise, librarians tell me, is just to blatantly mischaracterize their requests. But here's the thing that really has librarians shaking their hands about this all, because in his letter, Sargent suggests that Macmillan is offering this perpetual access ebook copy because they want to address library concerns about the hard work of renewals and the high prices of library ebooks. But it's patently absurd to suggest that a single perpetual access copy accomplishes either of those goals. After all, it's one copy. So by definition, it saves a library at most $30. Whether you're New York Public Library or a small library in Vermont, you save $30 on books. And in the end, libraries still need to buy multiple copies of popular books to manage their patrons' demand. So they still have to deal with renewals and at regular prices. But here's the kicker that Sargent omits from the letter. And this is something that librarians pointed out right away. If libraries don't buy that half-price perpetual access ebook in the first 8 weeks of publication, it's gone. They lose it. Now, does that sound like a publisher that's concerned about renewals and high-end ebook prices? The single perpetual access copy is, I guess you could say, reverse embargoed. You can only buy it for the first 8 weeks, and after that, you're blocked. So from the outset, I think librarians have known exactly why Macmillan added the perpetual access copy to the deal here, and that's because books benefit from being discoverable in library ebook catalogs. But if they're embargoed for the first 8 weeks, those titles actually miss a potentially crucial discovery window. Thus was born the single half-price perpetual access ebook. It's just enough to entice some libraries to catalog the ebook and to start piling up holds and to create demand and frustration. In fact, most libraries told me that they aren't interested in that single copy of the perpetual access ebook and they won't buy it because it actually monkey wrenches their ability to spend wisely.
Now, how does that work? Isn't there significant value to having access to a book forever?
You know, there is, and for some libraries, that's especially true, but not for all libraries, and many just don't care to keep books around forever that never circulate, whether they're digital or on the shelves, and a lot of books just stop circulating after a while. That's a fact. That's why we end up having to weed copies off shelves. But here's why the perpetual access copy complicates things for libraries, because you know, most libraries have a limit on how long they will make users wait for a book or an ebook. So, for example, a library might have a rule saying that it'll buy one copy for every 5 holds. So if that library, to start, is allowed one copy of a Macmillan book for the first 8 weeks, like Macmillan proposes, that copy is just going to sit there and pile up holds for 2 months, meaning that when the book is finally freed from the embargo, the library is going to have a lot of catching up to do. So it's going to have to go back out there, and in order to meet its copies to holds ratio, it's going to have to buy a ton of copies. But after 2 months, and with potentially months more to go on the holds list, how many readers will have moved on? Other books, other things, potentially leaving the library stuck spending money on expensive, time-limited ebooks it no longer needs.
Also in the letter, John Sargent argues the embargo is necessary, and he cites a familiar refrain, necessary to protect the perceived economic value of the book. What do you make of that?
Yeah, and well, I'll say this. I'm equally amazed by how much the ebook market has changed over the last decade since 2010, and how little John Sargent's thinking about the ebook market appears to have evolved over the last decade. And once again, this is another point that I heard from librarians on that has them upset, because in this letter, Sargent still suggests that there's no friction in the library ebook market, when in fact there is significant friction. You know, holds on the ebook list can last for many, many months, even years in some cases. You can't just get an ebook instantly from the library. I mean, we've spoken about this many times on this program. And if you go back to 2010, there was an article written by the brilliant Eric Hellman on his blog, Go to Hellman, where Sargent claims, this is in 2010, mind you, almost the identical things, his concerns about the library ebook market and what that would look like. Because remember, 2010 is 4 years before Macmillan even started licensing books into the library market. And it's crazy because what Sargent says then is almost identical to now, despite the experience that we now have in the market. But you know, back to your question, Sargent's underlying rationale for this embargo, as you say, to protect the perceived economic value of ebooks, particularly new release ebooks, if that sounds familiar, it should, because it's the same thinking that drove the Apple eBooks price fixing conspiracy. With the Apple eBooks case, our listeners will remember, publishers were worried about Amazon's $9.99 price devaluing their new release hardcovers. So they hatched a scheme to take over consumer pricing, the agency model, right? And while that led to a federal antitrust action, to a lawsuit, it was, in the end, successful, because publishers did actually take control of consumer pricing. They did succeed in moving the market to the ebook model, where they now set the prices to consumers. Whether that's a good thing or not, not sure. We'll leave that for another day, another podcast. But in this case, what Sargent is fighting against now is not a $9.99 price point from Amazon, but a library lend. And I have to say, I think it's a very questionable battle.
Why the conclusion that this is a losing battle for Macmillan?
Well, very simply because Macmillan is alone on this. You know, legal or not, in the Apple situation, all the major publishers, except for one, Penguin Random House at the time, they moved together. In this case, all the other major publishers have said they're not going to go down this path of windowing ebooks and libraries. So one, you really can't save the book, as John Sargent says Macmillan is trying to do here, right? Save the perceived value of the book if all the other publishers out there are against you, if they're still lending to libraries, if they still see value in participating in the library ebook market. All you're going to do in that situation is lose market share to your competitors. Now, will the other publishers follow along? Right now, they say no. They show no interest and taking on a battle with public libraries. But no question, they're going to be paying attention as to how this all plays out, which leads me to a second observation, which is, in the Apple case, it was the publishers who broke the law. But what's fascinating is that the public was with them on that. They feared Amazon, and they saw what was happening in the market. And even though it took an illegal scheme to reach the goal, the public actually supported the publishers in that case by a pretty wide margin. But in this case, Macmillan is Amazon. The public is with the libraries on this side. You know, you're seeing that in the headlines. You're seeing that through public libraries on their websites. And as I reported today, many librarians are now boycotting Macmillan and their patrons, and saying, and their patrons are saying, good for you. They're not saying, no, I want my ebooks. This is outrageous. They're saying, good for you. Stand up to that publisher. So fundamentally different situation for Macmillan now than with the Apple case.
So that's where we stand on November 1st, Andrew. But what happens next?
You know, it's really hard to say. I think the good news for libraries is that Macmillan and John Sargent do now appear willing to really talk about this issue. And I know ALA has actually asked Macmillan to delay the embargo, at least for a couple of months, until some of these discussions have taken place. Because it's going to be, you know, frankly, you know, it's easier to delay this than it is to unwind it once Macmillan implements it and libraries have embargoes in place. And, you know, it would be easier to just stop it and have talks. And then, you know, if Macmillan wants to go back to it, okay. If by some miracle they decide not to, well, that's something else entirely. But whatever happens in the talks, I'm not sure where this goes. You know, I'll say this, librarians have been saying the same thing from the start to a person, to every single librarian. They've been saying to Macmillan, don't do this. Do other things, we can talk about those, but don't strike at our basic access. But not only did Macmillan do it, they seem to really believe that they're doing the right thing. And as people know, it's a really hard thing to change someone's mind when they believe in something so deeply and so fundamentally.
Well, I believe you will be back on Friday, and that's something I think is rock solid. Andrew Albanese of Publishers Weekly joins me on Beyond the Book every Friday. Thank you for joining me today, and we will speak with you next week.
My pleasure, as always.
Coming up on Beyond the Book, in March, the European Parliament approved the Directive on Copyright in the Digital Single Market. The Copyright Directive has its opponents and its supporters, from Google and Sir Tim Berners-Lee against to Agence France-Presse and Sir Paul McCartney in favor. The first draft of the legislation that became the directive was released in September 2016. 3 years later, it now remains for the EU member states to pass national legislation that meets the directive's requirements, as Elizabeth Krosick with Relics told me at Frankfurt Book Fair.
As so often in these cases, the Commission comes up with something which is pretty pragmatic and tries to find a middle ground. Then you get the kind of the Parliament tacking it, I suppose. We had a big push for kind of what we would call copyright left, so the breaking down and dismemberment of copyright as and where possible, with member states being a little bit more pragmatic and recognising, you know, the value of copyright. And I think where we've ended up is actually in a sensible place, but it is a directive. And so that's important to note, because it doesn't just get implemented as is. All the member states now need to adopt laws to implement the directive. So I think it's early to say how it's going to pan out, but for the moment, I think we're in a good place.
The European Copyright Directive moves forward. Next on Beyond the Book. Beyond the Book is produced by Copyright Clearance Center. Our co-producer and recording engineer is Jeremy Brisky of Burst Marketing. Subscribe to the program wherever you go for podcasts and follow us on Twitter and Facebook. The complete Beyond the Book podcast archive is available at beyondthebook.com. I'm Christopher Keneally. Thanks for listening, and join us again soon on CCC's Beyond the Book.